This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Make sure that you price it properly. You know, it's not a charity that you're running. I mean, price it properly. I've seen people who, I don't know, like knit a cardigan and they take, I don't know, 7 days of 8 hours. So that's what, 50 plus hours to make the cardigan. And then they're going to sell it something like what, £50? And you think, hang on, does that even cover the price of the wool?
That was just a snippet from this week's guest, Catherine Marsh. Catherine helps people feel and look fabulously stylish and happy by creating timeless tokens of love. Her fine jewellery is ethically handmade in London with recycled silver and gold and infused with a French chic twist. We had a great chat touching on all kinds of things, including how Catherine makes her unique jewellery and her take on how to price your products. This was a fantastic conversation and I can't wait to introduce you to Catherine. So hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello, Vicky. How are you today?
Really good, thank you. And I hope you are too. It's so nice to be able to see you through the power of Zoom. I do like that I can see people's faces.
I agree.
So can we please start by, are you telling us about your business and what it is that you sell, please? And actually what it is that you make, because I know that you actually hand make all of your products.
So, hi, my name is Catherine Marché, and I handmake fine jewelry in precious metals, gold and silver. And I tend to use recycled metals because I want to help safeguard the environment and the planet. So I use gold and silver, which has been recycled locally in London where I live, or I melt old jewelry myself and recycle it myself.
Oh wow! I might start there then. How do you melt down old jewelry? Is that like, do you need like special equipment for that? That sounds
yes. You need a torch, and also something called boric acid. I don't want to be technical, but no. Basically, you apply a lot of heat until the metal becomes liquid, and then you're going to pour it into a kind of, a frame, I would say, made of metal or charcoal to give it a little bit of a shape you can start working from. And then you're going to either transform it as a sheet of metal or as a rod. Like, for example, I have one there. No, where's the camera? Yeah. So that's okay. Gold, which has been recycled from rings, old rings. And it's going to become another band, another wedding band.
Oh, that's amazing. So how did you, two things really. One is, how did you learn to do all of this? Because it sounds absolutely fascinating. And yeah, let's start there. How did you learn to do all of this?
I had to go to school again. First enrolling in classes to see if it's something that could interest me. And then I decided to go for a degree. So I went back to college. Trained to several years to learn, and I think I still haven't finished learning because it's such a vast domain that you can keep learning all your life, new techniques, new ways of doing something. So it's quite interesting in that aspect.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And as you say, you must just be able to continually hone your skills, learn new skills. So what was it? So first of all, how long ago was it that you went back to college and started learning how to do this?
Oh, it was about 16 years ago.
Okay. And what was the inspiration for deciding to do that? What had you been doing up until that point?
I was in IT. So I was working with computers, I mean, on the programming side, managing projects and to make programs and softwares for big companies, and also working as a consultant, IT consultant, information technology. And I quite enjoyed it, but I always also had a creative side. So while I had been working in the city, I also went to art classes. I also did etching, painting, engraving. I mean, quite a lot of different things. And I always had these two sides. But then I wanted to have a family. And the problem with IT is that I was working very long hours. Sometimes, you know, finishing at 11 p.m. or being called in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. if there was a problem with something, or having to work at the weekends. And I thought that it wasn't really compatible with having young children. So I was trying to see what else I could do. And one thing that I never had enough and I was commissioning was jewelry. And I thought maybe instead of commissioning it, I should just learn how to make it myself. And that's kind of how I got started.
And so when you got started, did you intend that it would become a business and, you know, you would sell your pieces, or was it something you planned to do just for yourself right at the outset?
I didn't. It was completely, it just happened. I enrolled in a class, I thought it was fun. Some of the things I was making in the class really was my test because we were following the teacher's guidelines. And then I put them on for sale on Etsy, and it sold. And with the money, I paid for more classes. And basically, that's how I funded all my training. Like, I was making something which I was selling, and then with the money, I would buy some tools, or I would get onto more training. So it just happened. And then when I decided to go for the degree, I think I thought that actually, since I had started to sell things, I should hone the skills. So that's why then I went there, and I also took a little business class as well.
So it sounds like initially you were just selling sort of one-off pieces on Etsy, but now obviously you have quite a large store. And am I right in thinking your designs have also been Hatton Gardens as well, and a few other places? So how did you go from selling the odd piece on Etsy to where you are now? I know it's been 16 years, so I know it's going to be quite a journey.
Good
I know
question.
That hasn't happened overnight.
Good question. I think that I entered a few awards, I won some, so maybe I started to get some press coverage. I think that probably helped as well. And I knocked on doors. I think I just thought, you know, nobody is going to come and find me, so I just ask, would you like to stop my work? The worst that can happen is that they say no. So, you know.
Well, that's great.
Say yes.
Well, that's great. And I think probably, as you said, you've been doing this for 16 years now, which is a long time. No wonder you probably can't remember exactly how you got from there to here. I'm not sure I remember my life 16 years ago that clearly either. But I think, I guess it's partly carrying on doing what you've been doing. And it sounds like you're continually learning and improving what you're doing. And I've had a look at your pieces and they're so original and beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And I guess there is something to be said of just doing it.
So which one is your favorite?
I can't remember what you call the range with the flowers.
Bloom.
Yes. Yeah, I really like the rings with the made from the different metals with the flowers that you can stack. Those I thought were beautiful. Mm-hmm. And very simple but beautiful, which is kind of like my style. I don't like things very too big or much.
I like to keep it simple personally as well. I think if it's too elaborate, it's not something that I would personally wear too often. So, and also I think that when something is simple, you can then combine it with other items you already have more easily.
Yeah, I did like that your jewelry looks really wearable, if that makes sense. Like, because not all jewelry for me is, you know, when you're, especially you're a mom and you have all these other things. I don't know. Some jewelry just feels like it would sit in a box all of the time because you'd think, oh, where will I wear that? So yeah, I like that your designs are so wearable. I can imagine you could just wear them all day, every day, and they just go with all your outfits, which I think is really nice. So where do you find the inspiration for your jewelry?
I'm not sure. I think it's a mix of drawing from my own experiences, from my travels, from my culture. Sometimes it can be as simple as, oh, I like this stone, what could I do with it? Or I have an event to go to and I want to wear that dress. What would be nice with that kind of dress? I'm afraid I'm not really somebody who's going to look at a building and see inspiration like that, or you know, looking at a cloud or something. I think it's more spontaneous for me. I think it's quite spontaneous. It's more of, maybe I'm more tactile, and sometimes just by touching things and playing around with them, design goose parts. But I'm saying that, mind you, I do have sketchbooks which are full of designs as well. But I'm not completely sure where they come from.
No, I just wonder.
I think sometimes it's just, you know, you're on the phone and you sketch. I mean, and then I look at what I've done, I thought, oh yeah, why not? But I think it's more absent-minded. I don't know. Where does it come from? Everywhere.
Yeah, I just wondered whether it was sort of, you know, you made pieces that you would like to wear yourself that others like, or whether, do people, I know you do bespoke designs as well, don't you? So you have, so I guess clients also tell you exactly what they would like.
Yeah, I've got both. Yeah, that's true. But in a way, I think that the clients who come to me because they like my style already. So then the commissions I work on are not that far removed from my own aesthetics, I would say.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I suppose that makes sense. You'd have to like somebody's style to think that would suit you. So yeah. That does make sense.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that right at the beginning when you decided to take your degree, you took a business course as well. So was that at the stage where you were thinking, actually, I could build a business around this?
Yes, I know. The thing is that it wasn't a business course as such as business. It was really something for jewelers.
Okay.
So it was more about how to price your items, how to, you know, keep track of your stock, or how to do a sell and return agreement, or your terms and conditions. I mean, really more practical. I wish I had an MBA. That would be easier, I think. But no, it was something that I found at London College of Fashion. So I think it was more tailored for creative people.
Okay. And you mentioned that at the beginning you were selling pieces on Etsy. And I feel like Etsy must have just been around then as well. Was it quite new?
Yes, it was quite new. I think it was 2 years old.
Oh, wow.
One or 2 years old. I even at the time had the... I think it was lunch or dinner with one of the founders, because at the time, you know, as it was quite small, they wanted input from people in London, and so it was completely different from now, I think, because there's been a change. They're more commercial now, but before that it was more focused on handmade and creations.
Yeah, again, I guess as well, there's a lot more sellers on there now than there were 16 years ago. And as you say, I've definitely seen the change in the products that are sold there. There still is a lot of handmade, but there were also products that, you know, maybe they've been printed, or they're digital products that haven't necessarily been made by hand. And do you still sell there now, out of interest?
I have a few items there, yes, still.
But do most of your sales come through your website?
Yes, mainly. From my website, and also from the showroom.
Is that the showroom in the Oxo Tower?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll come to that in a second. No, go with what you're saying.
I was just going to say,
I don't want to lead you flow.
I was just going to say that because of all the COVID issues, I think the workshop is going to be, the showroom is going to be a bit more quiet. You have less visitors, definitely.
So has your workshop still been open throughout the pandemic? Did you have to close a while?
I had to close, yeah. During the lockdown, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and since you've opened up again, are you still getting visitors that are coming to see you there, or has it gone down a bit?
I try to arrange visits outside of the workshop. I prefer to meet them at the showroom because there are more space, so therefore you can respect the social distancing much better.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so the workshop and the showroom, separate locations.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
I mean, the showroom does have a tiny bench and you can do a little bit of work there. It doesn't have all the tools and the machinery.
And I imagine you've got a lot of tools and machinery as well, especially if you're, you know, repurposing existing jewellery. Yeah, that must involve a lot.
Define a lot.
Well, that's true. There's probably...
No, but it's true. Yes, I do have some equipment.
And so I've gone completely off track from what I was going to ask you, but where do you find the jewellery to, if you're sort of using existing gold, for example, how do you find that to make into your pieces?
At the moment, most of it was coming from the clients.
Okay.
So sometimes it has happened that they wanted me to reuse the gold that they had in their family to make something for them. So I use their gold. Some of the times, some people have jewelry they really do not like anymore. And so it's part of the payment.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. And so coming back to when you first started, so you sold a few pieces on Etsy and then you did your degree. At what point did you think, actually, I'm going to set up a website and I'm going to make a business out of this?
I think I did the website almost at the same time because, okay. I mean, I was in IT, so the website was like easy peasy. Oh, I just make a website.
That's true, actually. For so many people, the website is a really big deal. But for you, I imagine it was, just an afternoon.
Well, the thing is that it's also about mathematics. You just think, okay, what do I do? Do I have my items in a place with 500,000 other people? Which means that what happened to me a few times that, you send people to the Etsy shop and then they're really happy to tell you that they've bought something because they think that they bought from you, but they end up buying from another seller on the same platform.
Okay.
Because they don't realize that everything is mixed together.
That's true. And I think now probably people are a bit more savvy with that because we're more used to online marketplaces. But yet back then, actually 16 years ago, I can imagine it was quite a new concept, wasn't it, actually, marketplaces with sellers. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, there was some in Germany, some in France, one in the US. There wasn't much in the UK, I think, at the time. But I think also the other thing is that if you have your own website, you don't have to pay a third-party commission to another company, like in a shop or another platform.
Yeah, and you have complete control as well. I mean, I suggest to people even now that it doesn't matter where you're going to sell, even if you think your whole business will be on Etsy, it's a good idea still to have some kind of web presence just so people know they're buying from you.
But the other thing is that with the Etsy terms and conditions, you're not allowed to contact the clients again. So it's hard to have a relationship with them.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
Which is why if you have them on your own website, then it's easier if you want to send them some news or invite them to an event or, you have a special sale for them or something.
Yeah, exactly. You can sort of, you own the customer, which I think is the case on most online marketplaces now, is if you've got no idea who's buying from you, you might have a postal address or something, but you don't have permission to contact that person ever again.
Because there's the GDPR as well.
Yes. And a lot, do you get repeat customers? Do you get people that are delighted with something you've made for you and then come back again?
Yeah, I have a few.
Yeah, so I can imagine that if you find someone that you like, especially with bespoke pieces, that you might come back or you'd recommend to a friend. So, yeah, I think it's really nice if you can have a relationship with people and they know that it's you they're buying from. It makes such a difference. So in terms of where else, so you sell obviously still a little bit on Etsy and your own website. So where else can people go and buy your products? So you mentioned the showroom, which is in the Oxo Tower. So where else can people buy your products at the moment?
Well, with the pandemic, I have to say that most stockists, they closed down.
Oh, that's a shame.
Because there were several of them were not able to sustain the costs of keeping their gallery. So I am on several online websites now. There's one in France, and then a few are in the UK, like Sikt. There's Electric Artisan. There is also another one called Aureus Boutique, and one which is also only, what I like with these is also that a lot of them only focus on sustainable, ethical jewelry, like just exquisite jewelry. So yes, I'm on a few places like that to help people find me.
But it sounds like it's really changed then over the last 6 months. So we're recording this for context, and for people listening, we're recording this in the middle of October. So it sounds like in the last 6 months, it's really changed a lot for you.
Yes, not just me, I think. I think probably a lot of a lot of people who had things in shops. I mean, for example, in the Oxo Tower, where we have a showroom, I would say since March, probably 4 or 5 businesses closed down.
That's such a shame.
Quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I think there might be more coming. I mean, it's quite shocking, actually. It's very difficult because on one hand, you know people, they need jewelry. They need arts and crafts. And, everybody needs something nice in their life to feel good. Or to have a nice surroundings, but it is difficult if you are a business, a local business, to have the clients come to you when the physical places don't trade anymore. So yeah, you have to go to more online places, I guess. I've seen a lot of people try to do events on places like Instagram. I don't know if it works or not. I hope it does for them. But a lot of people don't do online. So, yeah, I don't know.
I'm sure there were more people moving online, though, because as you say, that's for some people, that's probably the only option now.
Yeah.
So have you had to do anything differently since the pandemic?
I wear a mask. My hand 500,000 times. Yes. The thing is, for example, I mean, it's just little things like you're used to go to a specific place, for example, to have your stones set in a ring, if it's something very specific, like a pavé setting, for example. But quite a few of the stone setters were not able to keep their workshop in Hatting Garden. So you have to allow much more time for every jewelry commission that you work on, because something that would take maybe, I don't know, 5 days now will take 15 days because you have to find if the person is still trading, see where they are, see how you can get the work there, then has to come back to you. And even things like having your work assayed, the service operates, reduced hours. So you have to change the way you organize your day in order to go exactly during these limited hours in that place, but another shop has other limited hours. So the gemstone dealer, you have to do it at another moment. I mean, you do have to adapt definitely to that. And also the other thing is I do not want to take public transport when it's busy. So my day is going to be shrinked right in the middle outside of rush hours. So yeah, I think you have to, you know, take precautions, because the last thing you want is one to get sick, but you don't want to pass it to anyone. You don't want to be the person who's going to spread, you know, the virus because you've been careless. So you have to take special care at everything, every stage of the jewelry making as well. Or if you have a meeting with somebody, you both wear masks, you disinfect, you know, the jewel before, after. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, everything's a lot more difficult now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So let's bring things up a bit and talk about something that's more positive. So I'd love to know some of the things that you love about your business. So whether that's around the creative side or the business side, let's talk about some of the things that you enjoy.
I enjoy meeting clients. I really like being part of their love story in a way, or helping them find something they love. I don't know whether it's a pair of earrings or some special, you know, jewelry with an emotional content. I think it's really, yeah, a blessing to have the chance to help with that. Knowing that something you make, you know, might pass on generations or is going to celebrate a birth, a christening, I don't know, an anniversary or a graduation. Yeah, it's really special. And I enjoy that bit, definitely.
That is lovely. And you mentioned at the beginning that one of the things that sort of prompted you to move from your IT career was starting a family. So has that worked as you've expected? Has this business worked around your family life in the way that you thought it might?
Yes and no. so yes, I've been able to tailor my days to the kids' schedules, especially when they were little, and breastfeeding, you know, things like that. And being able to go to the parent-teachers meetings but then I found that it's very difficult when you have your own business to have boundaries between your life and business. So there has been some encroachment. You know, sometimes I would check my emails on the Sunday when I'm not supposed to check my email on the Sunday, because Sunday is a weekend. So I think you have to really be self-disciplined and compartmentalize, you know, business life.
Yeah, I think that is a challenge when you run your own business, because it can just start to blend together. And is your workshop separate from your home? Is it in a separate place?
Yeah.
Oh, that is quite nice then, I suppose, because there's no temptation to go into another room and start making something. Or is that not really the case?
Well, the thing is that with the pandemic, I did bring back a few things because, you know, you had to close down for you don't know how long. So yeah, that can be a temptation sometimes.
Yeah, I can see that, especially if you love what you do, and I can tell that you do. So we just have one final question to finish off, if that's okay, Catherine, which is one I ask everybody. And that's, so what would your number one piece of advice be to someone else who wanted to start creating and selling products, whether that's jewellery or just anything that they're creating?
You mean like taking the step to
maybe making the step from moving from a corporate career to doing something creative? Just any advice you think that you would want someone to know, or that you would like to have heard 16 years ago?
Well, I don't really listen to people's advice, so I'm not a very good person. But okay. So I would say you have to listen to yourself. You are the only one who really knows exactly what it is that you want to do and why. And sometimes people who are going to give you advice are going to hinder your, wouldn't say your judgment, but they're going to put brakes to your, to you flying through. I don't know if that makes sense. I would say that sometimes if you're too reasonable, you're going to, you know, try to tell her for the mass. But the thing is that everybody has a specific something special, which is not necessarily for everyone. And by being yourself and staying true to yourself, you're going to attract the people who are going to love what you really do. But if you try to not be yourself, you're not going to enjoy what you make anymore, what you're going to try to do anymore. And then it's going to take longer and it's going to be boring. But the other thing I would say is also do your mass. I see so many times people trying to make a living, but their prices are absolutely too small because they don't take into account their time. They don't take into account, you know, everything that comes around, like insurance and da 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 da. And I think that if you really want to be serious about something, one, do something you love the way you want to, unless it's really something that is not possible or not legal, I don't know. But and make sure that you price it properly. You know, it's not a charity that you're running. I mean, price it properly. There's no, I've seen people who, I don't know, like knit a cardigan and they take, I don't know, 7 days of 8 hours. So that's what, 50 plus hours to make the cardigan. And then they're going to sell it something like, what, £50? And you think, hang on, does that even cover the price of the wool? But I wouldn't, you know, make 50 hours of work for £1 per hour. I mean, yeah, you have to make sure that you price it right.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. And I haven't actually thought of it like that. But I guess you could, in fact, even set an hourly rate for yourself, just so you know what you're aiming for.
You have to.
Yeah. Is that how you tend to work? Would you, do you know what an hour, you don't have to tell me, but do you know what an hour of your time is worth to you?
Yeah. The thing is that if you, it's the only source of income that you have and you have to pay your rent, your food, your transport, blah, 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 you need to have, make sure that you're going to have that coming in. If it doesn't come in, no food, no house, you know? So even if, let's say you have, I don't know, another significant second who covers those bills, what happens if that other person decides to go away and you still have to, you know, make a living? You can't sell something for £1 an hour, 50p an hour. That's I mean, how can you have self-esteem? You need to be proud of what you make. You need to, you know, understand there is a difference between something that is handmade and something which is made in a factory where people are not paid decently or where the price of the cost of living is very low. You're not in the same category. You shouldn't compete with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's fantastic advice. Thank you. No one has ever said that yet. So I think it's good. No, it's good. It's good. I think that's good for people to hear. And in fact, yeah, it's given me things to think about as well. I think that's really good advice, because I think that it probably is very easy to undersell yourself, underprice yourself. I'm sure that happens much more than the other way around. I don't know this for a fact, but my instinct tells me that there are plenty of people who aren't charging enough for what they do. In fact, I've seen it myself. I've seen people selling things and I think, why did you sell them for this price? Because you could charge double that because they're really good. And I don't know, maybe it is a self-esteem thing partially.
I think it's for your self-confidence thing, but I think that I've also heard that people have the syndrome of the imposter. They think they're not worth it or that nobody's ever going to pay that much for what they've done. And it's not true.
I think there were all sorts of things.
You know, when you love something, that's why you want to get it. You don't really look at the price. You try to justify the price in your head. Oh, I don't need another coat. Oh, gosh, shall I? You know you want it. You just get it, whatever the price. I mean, or you're going to eat potatoes for a month and then you're going to go and get it. When somebody really wants something, they find a way.
That's good, thank you. And I think you're probably right that there's lots of mindset issues around pricing and underpricing a product and time as well. I think there's definitely a lot in that.
Yeah. Okay. Or if it takes you 50 hours and you think people will not buy it, then do it in cashmere. It's okay. You know, some more noble materials. Add diamond buttons, a bit of gold. But yeah, don't undersell yourself.
That's fantastic advice. Thank you so much, Catherine. So I'm going to put some links over in the show notes so people can go over to your website and take a look at your pieces, which are beautiful. And we'll also link to your social media and everywhere else so that everyone can come and find you.
Okay.
So thank you so much for being here and for sharing. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, thank you for the interview. It was really interesting. I enjoyed it as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
Merci.
As always, I hope you really enjoyed that conversation with Catherine and myself. I'd love to know what you think. You can email me vicky@tinychipmunk.com or you can find me on Instagram at @vickyweinbergproductcreation. Remember to subscribe to the show so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Thank you as always for being here and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Hi, this is just a little note. So if you've enjoyed this episode or indeed any of the episodes and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.